to show success.
Gentlemen, another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Speaking of Guerrilla Media, got this article in here. Will, you'll love this. How BBC warmists abuse the science. The timing was immaculate last Tuesday across a two-page extract from the memoirs of Peter Sissons, the senior BBC newsreader, was the headline, "The BBC became a propaganda machine for climate change zealots. I was treated as a lunatic for daring to dissent." The previous evening, the BBC had put out a perfect example of the zealotry which had made Mr. Sissons as a grown-up journalist so angry. Horizon's Science Under Attack turned out to be yet another laborious bid by the BBC to defend the global warming orthodoxy it has been long relentless in promoting. Now, one would think that, hey, propaganda is the modus operandi of mainstream media. Wouldn't you agree? Wouldn't it be illogical to assume anything different? After all, how the heck did they become mainstream unless they're pushing things on you rather than trying to inform you? How did society get so effed up if they were just telling the truth the whole time? You know, people don't understand the connections here. I should think it was quite obvious because I'm not clinically insane.
There's no money in truth, you see, Vinny, and a lot of the global warming left realize that Fox News spreads propaganda, and they realize that the mainstream media is used as a propaganda tool for corporations in general. They understand that. But the dumb little bastards don't understand that they're being propagandized on another level. And look around you. All the mainstream news promotes the idea of man-made climate change. Shouldn't that be a red flag in itself? Even before you start looking at the facts and realize Al Gore lied about CO2 preceding temperature, and Al Gore also played down the fact that the sun drives the climate on this planet, and that most CO2 comes from oceans and decaying flora and fauna. I mean, doesn't he? You know, don't these people get propaganda that it can apply to the left as well as the right?
Don't they get it? Well,
they'll never get it.
They probably don't, do they? But I would think that it's kind of self-defeatist, Will, to say that they would never get it. I mean, maybe there's a possibility if we repeated stuff over and over again and had a ridiculous amount of propaganda-type funding to propagandize them into realizing that the news is propaganda. You know, so in a roundabout way, they'd be brainwashed out of their original brainwashing. That's my goal. This is the listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, where it's propaganda for those who are already propagandized. And we'll be right back after this very, very short break. And thanks very much to our listeners at Rush 89 FM Hamilton. Some of you are actually tuning in via your sheds. We'll be right back. Divided we fall. Tune it down on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Ladies and gents, I met this guy online a while back, and we had a Skype chat, and we were basically sitting there the whole time just cracking up, laughing, and just having a barrel of laughs, really, talking about amusing things like genocide and assassination. his name is Seamus Coogan, and he joins us now live from the fabulous Palmerston, bloody north. Seamus, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me back again, then, guys. It's good to hear your voices. Mind you, I hear your voices every day. You know what I mean, when I listen to the show. So, but it's good to actually be able to communicate with you again. So, yeah,
you're pretty sick of them by now, huh?
Oh no! You've got great radio presence, I would say. You know, that would be the term. So it's all good, eh? And how have you guys been? Anyway, I just want to say one thing: the show has just been getting better and better in terms of the people that you guys have been having on. It's a credit to both of you and the pulling power that you've had. Like, I thought the best one that I've heard recently had to be my mate Joe Green when you got him on, guys. And that was a fun interview too, but he's a great guy, and it was just good to hear him go for it. And, no, full credit, man. You had Jason Burmis on the other day. And I'm not a huge fan of Burmis, but I do like him, and in a way.
So what makes you say that, Seamus, in case Burmis is listening?
No, if he is, I couldn't really give two pennies. But I do I think his heart's in the right place, if some of his historical information isn't, would be the term. Because, that one, his latest one of his, The Invisible, was it Invisible Empire, was it?
Or what
was
an Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined.
Yeah, well, look, here's one for you, because I got in trouble with a few mates last time I spoke to you guys. They just reckoned that I went off on a ramble, so I'm going to have to be a little bit more direct about what we'll talk about today, guys. So we'll stick to the Kennedy thing, and the first one that I'll talk about is Jason Burmis's Invisible Empire. In that film, in that documentary that he made a bit of an error. There's a speech that's used in it with Kennedy discussing secret societies and all that. Can you guys remember that segment of the film?
He claimed that he was referring to the communists rather than secret societies.
Yes, that's precisely what he was doing. That's cool, man. And see, that's in my piece on a certain person with the initials of AJ that I did. And you could look into that there. And but that was when I mentioned Burmis as well and part of it.
I think the message is still clear. This whole idea of a new world order and secret societies, I mean, the inference is there everywhere. I mean, like Burmis said, he only used about a third of the B-roll he had of these politicians calling for a new world order, mentioning new world order mid-sentence. Obviously, George Bush Sr., that was his grand vision. The term 1,000 points of light also. When they use the term 1,000 points of light, I mean, you can't make the mistake that they're referring to commies or something. I mean, that's a clear occult reference right there.
Oh, no, for sure. I think that I think there were the 1,000 points of light and those sorts of references too. It goes back to what we discussed about secret societies, wasn't it, Will, the other week? It was like, I've got no doubt that some of that stuff happens, and a lot, you know, I've got no doubt that some of these people are referring to this sort of thing. When they're talking about the New World Order, though, I think it's like everybody's vision of utopia. I think we've all got a different one. And so when one of these guys says, oh, there's going to be a New World Order happening, he's probably thinking, oh, great, it's going to be my vision of the future. I think everybody's got their own different version of reality. Like, for example, I'd say that John Kerry's version of a New World Order, for example, would be in George Bush's hell, you know, or would have been, you know. So I'm not saying, but that completely kind of, you know, it's just different kinds of strokes, different folks. So when it comes down to that New World Order stuff, like I said before, it's a nebulous world order. I mean, how many different think tanks and groups are there? There's only for about 500 of them. And that was also explored in the Burmis piece that I did. Maybe to do Jason justice, maybe we should get him on and have a debate with him here or something like that. I would really like that.
Well, Jason's a master debater. I mean, he's got a good mind on him. But no, I mean, if I know your point, and I've thought about this long and hard too. I mean, and I don't say because someone says New World Order, they're all in the same cabal, you know, masturbating in the same coffin or anything. But hey, at the same time, that's what they do. And the New World Order is broken up into different front companies, holding companies, and organizations. For that very reason, because they are the illumination of 1,000 points of light, and then they come to they don't put all their eggs in one basket. You know, they're not that stupid, but they have the overruling theme that is their occult wisdom, and Lucis Trust gather it, and the Golden Dawn use it, and the OTO use it over here, and this, you know, the Jesuits might use it, and the Templars may use it, and. But they're all working towards a common theme they call the Great Work.
Oh, it's funny if you go into the – because you're going really into the Masonic kind of things, aren't you, there? But, I mean, it's almost like you said before, they put all their eggs in the one basket. We're talking about masturbation in this instance. They're probably putting all their seed in one coffin. The problem that I – like I said, the problem that I have when you try and get into too much of the occult stuff and all that sort of thing is that a lot of it's actually been made up. There's a lot of authors out there that are just that have quite literally, in my opinion, have come up and dreamt up some really silly stuff. And of course, you've heard some people refer to the New World Order, quite literally. You've heard people mention all sorts of other things. And I'm trying to turn off my little thing with the here, guys. I'm just getting those little pop up noises.
Yeah. It's in your notifications there. We conduct the show via Skype, ladies and gentlemen. But moving on, there was also a couple of articles that you sent us through today. The Dark Legacy of John Hankey by Seamus Kurgan. Who is John Hankey?
Well, see, John Hankey is an interesting fellow, and this is what I was trying. This is what before Will and I went off on a little path. What we were trying to do. And this is no fault of Will's, actually. We were talking about this viral video last time, and it was called JFK2, and that's been put out since about roughly 2004. And now the research community, in terms of the JFK stuff, it's been around for a while now, but no one had actually really looked at this video and had actually commented on it. The problem was that a lot of people had seen it, and they thought it was so bad that they wouldn't even bother reviewing it. But the problem was that a lot of people out there, right, or just on the internet, they'd be looking at it on YouTube or Google Video, would look at it, and then they were coming up with some really, really odd stuff. And this was all after 9/11. Now, after 9/11 came out, I noticed that the conspiracy field got congested, and it got congested really badly with a lot of funk information. And this was one of the results of that. Now, this guy, John Hankey, has also done some stuff on Robert Kennedy, and John F. JFK Jr., and he believes that JFK Jr. was killed in his aeroplane flying to Martha's Vineyard with his wife. You know who killed him? Guess who killed him? It was a Manchurian candidate flight instructor who killed himself by leaping out of the plane, and then it plummeted into the water. Now, the whole thing, I think there's a possibility that JFK Jr. was taken out, but you don't need to have a Manchurian candidate pilot, and, you know, flight instructor alongside with them that can kill him and then get away with it. I mean, there's a thing called surface-to-air missiles, you know what I mean? There's a whole, like, mucking around with the fuel gauge, you know? There's a whole bunch of things. But this is the sort of extreme kind of BS that this guy gets into. And he's taken it upon himself since 2004 to become involved in the Kennedy thing. Now, you've discussed it with me that you don't like bagging people on the show. It's not good, and fair enough, okay? But
sure
the issue here is I like you, Will. You're making me feel better now.
like, we rag on the New World Order. We rag on leftists and fakes and shills and all of that kind of stuff. Where I like to draw a distinction is, like, if somebody's, like, got very, very good intentions, you know, I don't just, like, fly off the handle and insult them and say that...
Al Gore may have good intentions.
Truth or info thing. Oh, well, yeah, he's got good intentions, absolutely. You know, $1 billion good intentions for himself to carbon tax everybody else to death. You know, loving.
Look, this is the problem. We're going to go up on a tangent if I start talking about that carbon tax stuff. So I'd better keep my mind. I better keep my small mind focused, otherwise it's going to explode. I'll just go down this track. And I think that John Hankey, I think he may have had good intentions and all that kind of stuff, but he also had an agenda, you know, the size of China. And this is the big problem when you start getting into this. And this is one thing I've got to remind anybody out there that kind of wants to start researching and those sorts of things. You've really got to start thinking that you're not the only person with an idea like this. Okay, you've got to go check your sources. You've got to check out opposing arguments to your points of view, because every now and again, on the other side even, you know, they might be right. So you've got to look at your own arguments, and you've got to self-examine, and you've got to have critical analysis, and you've got to have critical analysis of yourself. So when I got into this about 17, 18 years ago now, I realized straight away that I knew nothing, okay, and I wanted to learn from the best, okay, and it took me about 10 years to find the best sources, the most consistent, the ones that no one was ragging on, and that's how I wound up with CTKA, and of course, since I've been hanging out with Jim DiEugenio and Lisa Pease and other people like that, my education's just gotten better. Now, that's one point that we didn't do last time. We could talk about briefly about CTKA. That's where I'm from. That's the organization that I'm part of. Not really an organization, but a research collective, basically. And this is where John Hankey kind of misses out. He came out with this idea without really checking it with anybody else. He just saw an opportunity to sell this thing. And he just put out all these different versions on the internet. There's about three or four of them, and with all varying degrees of accuracy in them, or inaccuracy, as it turns out. And anyway, it got to the point where John Hankey was on a radio station. You guys heard of a show called The James Corbett Report? Are you guys familiar with that at all?
Yeah.
He's a nice bloke, actually. But John Hankey managed to squeeze his way onto that show. And then he started running down Jim DiEugenio, who's my mate. But the problem is that Jim DiEugenio didn't even write the piece. It was myself. And then in the middle of this, Hankey calls Jim DiEugenio a CIA operative. Now, if anybody has got their head screwed on, Jim DiEugenio is probably, out of all of the research in the community, is probably singled out the Central Intelligence Agency more than anything. Not only involved in JFK's deaths, but hey, we're looking into, Martin Luther King's, we're looking into Malcolm X's, we're looking into Robert Kennedy's, okay? Not in that order, of course, but there's certainly some involvement there, not to mention other horrific crimes. Now, John Hankey's big sell, guys, and this is what we mentioned last time, Will, was that George W. Bush and the Bush family were behind, get this, this is a bit of a mountain. They were behind the Kennedy assassination. They organized that. And then they also organized 9/11. Okay, that's one of his big calls that he's made. Now, that's quite an undertaking, especially quite a few years apart. And the angle that he was trying to make was that this guy, Alan Dulles, was a puppet for Prescott Bush and the CIA. Now, I've got some friends of mine that kind of go along to it, but they're not. I don't actually rate them as researchers, to be honest with you. They talk a lot of gobbledygook. And this is the point. The Bushes are evil enough without them becoming the manifestations of Satan. You know, the evidence that they were involved in the Kennedy assassination is absolutely scant. There's none, okay? There really is none. And what
I've kind of heard this argument, not this argument, but a similar argument from Bomber Bradbury over here. He said to me, this was back in 2007 when I was sort of out in the street saying 9/11 is an inside job and stuff. And he said, look, the Bush administration's evil enough and they've done enough things to indict them upon without going as far as saying 9/11 is an inside job. And I said, yeah, that may be the case, but you're never going to get them indicted. And look, they never did. All the leftist causes, we're anti-war, That never got them indicted, you know what I mean? We needed to prove that they blew up their own – they killed 3,000 of their own people on an occult holiday. Why, you know what I mean? It's the idea that we don't need to go that far and then these guys get away with it. I say we need to go as far as the truth leads.
Yeah, and well, we had a conversation with a an ex-Marine, ex-Ranger on Waiheke Island this weekend, didn't we, Will? And he said that line that we've all heard before, you know, I just can't believe that that the US government would kill its own citizens. And I say, well, you know, yeah, that's right. What you believe, but beliefs are not facts, okay? The fact of the matter is the US government, the US government has killed its own people before it's released. It's released sarin gas into New York subways just to see what would happen. You know, they're like guy, scientists experimenting on. Yeah, very, very good guy. And we had almost every single point that he was talking about agreed with. He believes the government's corrupt and all BS, total libertarian. If you come on my ranch, I'll kill you, kind of thing.
He said it. I mean, and his son gave away that he was a Marine, and he's part of had ties to the Michigan militia or whatever. And now he's lives down the road from me, but he still couldn't believe that 9/11 is an inside job. He's like, no, I can't believe my government would do that. And I said, well, how about the fact that they're all in Skull and Bones and go to Bohemian Grove and stuff? And he's like, oh, yeah, they do a bunch of that stuff. I mean, I really think that should tell you the persona of someone. I wouldn't trust – I mean, if you had children or if you had even a dog and it needed babysitting overnight when you went out and I knew my neighbor was into mock human sacrifices – on the weekends, and he's a bit of a weirdo, and he was a secret society member and stuff. I wouldn't give him my dog, But instead, we give them the keys to the country. These people run our countries. It's mad. Right, and then people say, "Oh, it doesn't matter if they belong to the Masons." Of course, it matters. They're nuts. I mean,
you're living down the road from a
Michigan militiaman.
Oh, look, mate, that's just the half of it. The New World Order don't want to come into my town, I tell you.
They just want to. Okay, all right. Now, we're going off on a little bit of a tangent here, okay, again, but this is funny stuff. I think for anybody listening here, you can see that Will and I have got a difference of opinion on this one. I think that the terms...
We'll carry this on the other side of this break, mate.
Okay, speak.
Indeed we will. Our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Seamus Coogan from New Zealand, on part of our Kiwi Collaborator segment. And we will be right back after this very short break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison, just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission, I have it all under my command. Because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And welcome back, a ladies and gentlemen, to the fabulous Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special guest coming at us live from New Zealand is Seamus Coogan, and we're talking about JFK, and sometimes there's a few people out there who are spreading information that's just patently ridiculous. Seamus, welcome back.
No, thank you, man. That's cool. And it's a funny one. Like I've had some good conversations with Will about this at some other time, because it's just so tempting for me to go off into this Will path that he's beating. I'm not making any path here, mate.
The path I'm making is a path to power, and that's no, all I true. See. That's all I see. And so I believe people should have the freedom to run their own lives the way they want them run. But when I see the elite, when I see Tony Blair, who admittedly in British tabloids channels a being he calls the light every morning, and he rolls around on the ground doing this, and his wife's into it, and I knew Nancy Reagan was into it, and they had seances at the White House trying to bring back Nancy and all this weird stuff. These are mainstream reports. I know you can't always trust mainstream, but a lot of the time mainstream media, they throw things out and then they spin it. About 80% of intelligence is mainstream.
Trying to channel Nancy Reagan. You know what? The ray of light that he would, Tony Blair would see in the morning, if that would be it, would probably be the number two that he's taking. You know?
The problem is, for it doesn't matter whether you're an atheist or a Christian or a Buddhist or a skeptic or a rationalist or a Francis Baconist. It doesn't really matter. What matters is what powerful people believe in. So I don't care about Scientologists, and I don't join Anonymous, because Scientologists are just a loony bin cult who really don't affect anything. And if they want to believe in spirits and volcanoes and Xena and stuff, it really doesn't bother me. But if the people who issue the Federal Reserve notes out to the world, if the people who are engineering my food and fluoridating my water are in some death cult, I want to know about it. Because I want to know the principles they're using to govern our reality. And the problem is, as much as people want to laugh at them and go, oh, beaming, go, haha, just a frat group, just men jerking off and dressing up as women, the problem is they run stuff and they have more power than
you. Oh, no, for sure. I mean, this is the point. Yeah, no, and I agree with – sorry, Will. I've never been in contention of that kind of thing. What I have been in contention of, though, Chief, is that a lot of powerful people that I've heard of and all those sorts of things have been rumored to be part of these groups, and sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. The most important thing I think about places like Bohemian Grove, even in some of the Masonic stuff, is that it's a prime place for you to get blackmail, okay? So you've got to go along with what's going to happen. That's what I think is really important that you're forgetting here. With some of the stuff that they're doing, a lot of it's actually staged to put these guys in some deep, put themselves
the world's a stage,
stuff.
Though. So the world's a stage. I mean, they carry out ritual, like Britney Spears and Madonna admittedly carry out rituals on stage. You know,
right?
Madonna admits to this to mainstream media. She's an occultist. She and in her music video Frozen, if anyone just goes YouTube Madonna Frozen right now, you can see her doing all these occult hand signs. The music, everything is designed to put you in a beta brainwave suggestive state.
They're
genius at it. And people do like it because it has that zeal, it has that appeal to it. But
what I'm saying is
that these wizards run the planet and the world's a stage to them, sure. And so maybe it is a joke on us.
But anyway, back to JFK and this.
Yeah, put a leash on your boy.
For F's sake, Will, come on, man.
You're talking about here a product of the very same thing I'm talking about. So you want to talk products? I want to talk causes. But anyway, I'll let you go.
Yeah.
We'll talk.
Vinny doesn't like going places where people aren't meant to.
No, that's fine. But I think that we should. Because I think I want to try and put this hanky thing into perspective. So for any unsuspecting victims that have seen this on the internet before, they'll know that it's a real no-go. So what I might do from here on is I might just, to try and get my focus, my energies, I'll just quote some stuff from some of the essays that I've written about them, just to give you guys an idea of some of the problems that we've encountered. How does that sound? Unless you've got any questions that you'd like to ask me any further, Vince, about this.
No.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Cool. All right. Now, I'm just looking through here. Now, we had now, this was a thing. This is one of the things that he's been doing, okay? What people like John Hankey like to do is they like to get hold of people's books and say that, you know, that this was in there, that he said this, and he was going along this angle. Like, for example, there's these notes came out, okay, that actually had George Bush being part of the CIA just in and around the time that Kennedy was assassinated. Now, I'm not in any doubt about that, okay? And it also put him supposedly getting in touch with some anti-Castro Cubans, okay, at that point in time, because the FBI were concerned about there being an invasion of Cuba. They called up George W. Bush in Houston, okay, Houston, Texas, and asked what was going on. He said that there wasn't much, okay? This is basically what George Bush said. Now, of course, the CIA made a screw-up here, and they said that this wasn't George Bush. In actual fact, this George Bush that they were referring to was working at the CIA back at Langley. But they found out who this other guy, George Bush, was. And he said, look, I was working at the time, but I was just a lowly researcher. You know what I mean? I wasn't contacted for anything. So this started off this whole thing. Now, this came out in 1988, I think it was, by a guy called McBride. Okay, now, McBride never, ever said, okay, and in the document itself, you will see it, that there was no involvement of George Bush in this thing at all, okay? The document's titled, you know, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. But that's it. They were just using Bush as being a contact for the agency in that time. That's it, okay? It was nothing. It was routed through the system. If that had been a big-time document, they would have had real hard hitters coming in from the agency or the FBI, and they'd be talking about it, okay? But Hankey's got this idea in his head that it's George Bush, okay, that was organizing the anti-Castro Cubans and all this kind of stuff, and it's just absolutely bizarre. And the document says that they were worried that there might be a raid undertaken by the Cubans, okay, into Cuba after the assassination as for some sort of retaliation, or it as an excuse for retaliation. The point here that Hankey starts going on about there being a massive invasion of Cuba, okay? This document doesn't say anything of the type at all, okay? It's just absolutely ridiculous. Now, the thing about the document is interesting, of course, because when George Bush became, I think it was 74, 75, wasn't it, when he became the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, he said, you know what I mean, look, I had no contacts at all. I was just, you know, appointed, you know, I'm just the head of it. But that document was only there to prove that, in actual fact, his contacts with the agency went way, way, way back, you know what I mean, into the 60s. And that's the point. It has got nothing to do with the Kennedy. It's got nothing to do with his involvement in the Kennedy assassination whatsoever, okay? Now, he may well have been involved in something like, say, the Bay of Pigs going on earlier on. But, see, this is another thing. This is another huge problem as well. Okay, there's the thing about, you know, the two boats, you suppose, that they used. You know, there was the Houston, and then there was the Barbara J, I'm pretty sure, and they were going to land on Zapata. Now, if you want to look into all this, Houston was where George Bush was purportedly based. Okay, Barbara is the name of his wife. And, and Zapata was the name of his offshore oil company. Okay, fair enough. People can say, oh, that was George Bush. Now, the person that made that allegation was a guy by the name of Colonel Fletcher Prouty, whom we discussed briefly before on the last show that we did. Now, the issue here is that Prouty, even when he came up with this information, even he didn't go to the bank on it, for one. And secondly, too, there was a lot of other reasons why this thing came about. Webster Tarpley, if anybody's come across the unauthorized biography of George Bush on the internet by Webster Tarpley, now, that's a very, very good book. Now, we'll talk about that in a second, Will, because it goes off into some other tangents that you were talking about. And not tangents, mate. I don't mean that disrespectfully. But what happens here, okay, is that we've got George Bush and so supportedly organizing the entire Bay of Pigs operation, or being that involved in it, he named ships. Now, for people that don't know what the Bay of Pigs was, this was the first act of Kennedy's presidency. Okay, now, the CIA had set up an invasion of Cuba, and they'd promised him that there would be popular support and everything would work out with the invasion. Now, the real story seems to be, and this took place in, 1961, and they'd said to him, you know what I mean, look, it's all going to work out, it's going to be fine. But what they'd actually done behind his back, okay, this was really funny. What they'd done behind his back was they'd knew that the invasion, in actual fact, wasn't going to work. They'd actually set it up for a formal military U.S. and a formal invasion of Cuba. That's what they were really going for here. These anti-Castro Cubans were just schleps that they were going to use at the start, okay, to get massacred. Then they'd come in with the army. Kennedy found out about this pretty early on. He was like, holy crap, no, we're not going to go that way. And, of course, this reverberation comes back, and he fires a few people that were involved in the invasion. Okay, and key amongst those guys is a guy called Charles Cavill. Okay, who's, get this, whose brother was the mayor of Dallas when Kennedy went through there that fateful day on the 22nd of November 1963. He fired General Charles Cavill, and he fired his mate Alan Dulles, who was the kingpin of it all. Alan Dulles, if you want to go back into your occult weird stuff, Will, and Vinny, you want to look into the Kennedy assassination, because this is why the Kennedy assassination is so important. Okay, we'll pull back to the Bay of Pigs in a second about the George Bush stuff. But Alan Dulles really is the glue that binds the Central Intelligence Agency together. That was his baby. He made it. Now, if you want to look into a person that was fairly non, funnily enough, wasn't Skull and Bones. No real known Masonic links, even though he was purportedly one. It never really featured much. This guy never bothered to go to Bohemian Grove.
So wait a minute. You said someone was Skull and Bones, yeah? But they have no Masonic links.
No real Masonic connections. He was certainly behind the test.
I'm trying to laugh. You're saying Skull and Bones has no Masonic links?
No. Alan Dulles has got no links to this kind of stuff. He's certainly got links to, say, the Council on Foreign Relations. He upset it up. But this is what I'm trying to say. You know,
what's the logo
Bones,
of the Council on Foreign Relations again?
Is it?
It's a pale, naked man riding a horse. It's a naked man riding the pale horse of death, doing an El Diablo hand sign.
No, yes, I've seen that, yes.
With the beak written underneath of it, which is a Latin root word for the term ubiquitous, everywhere, yeah. As in we are gods.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
Look, no Masonic.
No, I'm not saying, like, hey, I'm not saying that at all, Will, right, that you're completely misrepresenting what I'm saying. But this guy didn't need those kinds of, you know, the higgledy-piggledy kind of stuff, all right? This guy was just powerful, all right?
Yeah.
So this is all I'm saying. So we didn't need Skull and Bones. In actual fact, but anyway, I'm losing the point here. What I'm trying to get back to is that this is Dulles. This guy's the kingpin. So anyway, returning to John Hankey. Okay, now this is where Hankey makes a huge leap here, because for one, Zapata, in actual fact, was the name of the bay. Okay, from which the Bay of Pigs was going to actually go into. Okay, it was just the cove off it. All right, now. Also, too, the Houston, how many oilmen with Central Intelligence Agency contacts were based in, you know what I mean, were based in Houston? There's a whole heap, okay? And as for the Barbara J, Barbara Bush hasn't even got a freaking initial in the middle of her name. It's just Barbara Bush. It's hilarious. So the Barbara J, so what Hankey tries to say, and see, well, you know, Will, you're quite up on it. I mean, he tries to say that J, transferred to either Greek or Latin, actually means two, okay? Because apparently George Bush had named a few of his planes in the Second World War that he was flying. Barbara, go Barbara.
And we will get into more of this after the break. Our very special guest is Seamus Coogan, live from New Zealand. And we'll be right back after the break.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you understand?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in partnership with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special guest joining us from New Zealand today is Seamus Coogan. He's JFK Research Phenomenon.
What, chucks? No.
Well, but Charles, he's throwing you a knife.
Well, before I go off onto another stream, I'll just finish off what we were talking about before, if I can recall. What I was discussing before, just people that came back in the break, was about George Bush and the Bay of Pigs, okay, and how John Hankey, a researcher, has made some rather extravagant claims about what we were on about it. And the issues that we've just had, and just before we were about to go, Will was actually quite up on a lot of the stuff that we were talking about before in terms of, you know, about ancient, I would say, imagery and all that kind of stuff, especially like numerals and Greek and Latin. Now, Will, if you could do me a favour, I'm just a little bit tied up at the moment. This guy Hankey made a claim that Barbara J, in actual fact, meant two on the side of the boat. Okay, on the side of the thing. Do you want to look into that for me and try and find if J in actual fact means two, you know, in Latin or Greek? Because I'm pretty sure it doesn't. And see,
okay, he what's went the spelling off, there? Just J or
Barbara. Yeah, Barbara J. Just Barbara J. And that was the thing, but it's just a J. Just, do you want to have a look on Wikipedia or something for me? Because I've written it down, but I don't want to go into it. But I'm quite interested to get your observation on it. So if you do that, but just
J-A-Y, yep.
No, just Barbara J, just a straight out J, brother. Just see J in terms of what it equates to, in terms of numerals. And it doesn't come up as anywhere near two, you see. But I need to get your confirmation on that just for the thing. And this was where it goes. And you see, this is where the occult stuff that Will and I were talking about comes into it.
V is six, you know, so Volkswagen has VW. Yeah. Is actually 3 score 6, Adolf Hitler.
Right, that's an interesting one, Chief. But, of course, it could mean people's car too, you know what I mean? Like, all folks' car.
This is the thing about the occult, and if you apply your logic to it, because you're a smart guy and you have a logical mind, you see, but that doesn't work in their realm, and that's how they get away with what they get away with. They have multiple meanings, up to 7 meanings in general, for any term, like even Moloch. So people argue it's an owl, it's a bull, and all these sorts of things. And they said, oh, Alex Jones got it wrong. Moloch's got nothing to do with an owl. It's a bull that the Persians used to throw children into a copper version of, you know. But the female version, because it always has a male and a female as well, just like the French language, Masonic language, the female derives Moloch to be an owl.
Well, it's funny what you're saying, that too, because if you look into the origins of Moloch itself, it's actually Carthaginian, okay? It goes right back. They had that as well, but I've come across no descriptions of it. There have been some other ones that have been written about Moloch and all that kind of stuff, but the descriptions of it actually being used to feed children to and all that stuff in ancient times, the evidence for it, man, is completely and utterly scant. This is where I start to get worried about some of the stuff that comes through. It makes up for very, very, very poor history, and I think we've got to be very careful. Very, very careful when you start dabbling into this, because, okay, there might be some symbols that's been read into it. There might be something not.
It's in the Old Testament. It's in the Old Testament. I mean, this is the basis for Moloch's in the Old Testament. I mean, this is the basis. It's in Leviticus, in fact. It's in the book of Leviticus. Anyone can look it up. But, I mean, this is the basis for a huge amount of the planetary belief structure. I mean, this is whether people agree with it or not.
Well, yeah, but see, okay, well, we have to have another talk about this, though, too, man, because I'm really into this, and it's really interesting what you're saying about it, though, okay, about Moloch and all that, because it's a little bit more complex than what we've been, than what we could give the listeners justice to at the moment, isn't it, Will? So what I'll
well,
do...
Well, the sad thing, though, is we're debating little tiny grains in the whole structure. Most people out there don't even know Bohemian Grove exists, and that is not up for debate.
Right, well,
and they can try and go there, and they'll get shot up.
Well, look, here's one thing that your viewers should, if they really want to look into Bohemian Grove and all that kind of thing, but to get quite a balanced appraisal on it, really, and Will, you should do too. Have you heard of a guy called John Ronson? Okay, what you guys should do...
Yeah, I know John Ronson's a BBC apologist, one of these mainstream guys.
He's a brilliant writer, man. He's brilliant.
He went along with Alex Jones and back in 2000 as part of a Channel 4 documentary series where they kind of take the line of Louis Theroux. They take this middle-of-the-line approach. And look, John Ronson actually quite liked, because he knows there is world government being established. But at the time...
some interesting stuff, man, yeah.
I would actually like him for a mainstream journalist, but he's still a mainstream journalist. He knows his place, and he knows what he can say and do in a controlled world and his little pawn part in a controlled scenario. I mean, people do what they got to do. But Jay is a tenth. Jay just means 10 as far as I can find out.
Yeah. So this guy,
the perfect number.
Cheers for that, mate. See, and so we're getting into some weird stuff, and this is where Hanke, uses such bad history that even if you wanted to understand, if you want to take your angle on it, Will, if you wanted to understand, say, for example, the cult, you get what I mean? The cult, or the occult side of, say, George W. Bush, you know, especially senior, it would just make it just seem pathetic.
Well, he joined the CIA because he was in Skull and Bones. That's the truth of it. Because the CIA was formed from Skull and Bones members after the OSS, and they used Nazis.
That's not true. 1947. Skull and Bones did not form the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yes, it did. They did.
Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the segment, and we will be right back.
Before I strangle him.
Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, brought to you proudly in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Now, on the show, we have a whole bunch of Kiwi guests that basically nobody else in the world's ever heard of in a lot of sectors, debating and talking about ranges of different issues and that kind of thing. And one item that I wanted to particularly get into is truthers who are musicians. And we have one on the line for you today, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Jason Kerrison. He's the lead singer of a very successful New Zealand band called Op Shop, and he joins us now from Auckland. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Vinny. It's good to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, mate. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit of something. I mean, you're a 2012-er, is that correct?
There's certain preparations I'm making, given the conversations that are going on out there around that date. Yes, I think I'd probably throw myself in that mix.
And of course, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other elements, because you're a good friend of John Eisen from uncensored.co.nz. So reading the magazine kind of does fill you up with a lot of different things upon a broad spectrum. So you're aware of the New World Order and eugenics and all of that kind of stuff, eh?
Yeah, look, I'm aware of a lot of the discussions, and I don't know where my personal philosophy actually integrates into a lot of that stuff. It's as you say, there's a lot to actually take on board and a lot to digest and compress and make sense of. But I'm certainly aware of it. In fact, Jonathan's out there sitting on my deck eating sushi and drinking New Zealand kōkākau coffee as we speak.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Oh yeah. And your music itself, I mean, how long have you been playing?
I've been a performer and a lover of music since I remember jumping in bathtubs as a kid with other kids and usually my family. So, man, it's hard to put a number on it, because I've been around about 38 years or so, and I have been in bands for probably at least a good three quarters of that, or at least jamming away.
And and the debate within your band or your family, talking about these type of subjects can sometimes be a little can get a little bit hostile. Have you experienced anything like that?
Yeah, look, it's particularly within the band, and I wouldn't say that it's necessarily hostile, but it can certainly be polarizing for people who aren't used to my bunch in streams of stream of conscious type rants, you know, and then often they are what inform the songs. And occasionally, when you know, when the guys do ask what the songs are about, and I tell them, they're not necessarily that excited about it. I think it's a bit kind of absurd and generally nonsensical at the least. But you know, I think it's only fair to them for me to tell them what the songs are about that they do play.
Well, what's an example?
I noticed a long time ago, Jason, in fact, that listening to some of your music, I think it was No Ordinary Thing, one song I really, really liked, and you had a couple of lyrics, If We Can Liberate Today, We Can Alleviate Tomorrow. And
I love it.
Really liked that one, and I was thinking, yeah, this guy's onto something here. I think he knows a bit more than he's given away.
And I think when it comes to being a songwriter too, at the end of the day, it's about actually finding some escape. And as well as hopefully resonating with certain parts of people's psyche that, you know, hope, in a sense, give an introduction.
All right. Our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Jason Kerrison from Op Shop, and he joins us for a very short segment because he's got some meetings to go to later on. But he'll be back in this next segment coming up right after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Gentlemen, for the show that's all about the Godfather, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest, an extremely talented musician and all-round good dude, Jason Kerrison from Op Shop, joins us here on the line. Welcome back.
Hey, cheers, mate.
And Jason, you're the only reason Vinnie didn't sing us in just then. He normally does.
Is that what actually happens?
I have operatic ambitions that must be restrained. Now,
well left.
Yes.
Perfect, Jim.
Now, we were talking over the break about kind of how you were sort of running your music, and you never really intended to go some sort of mainstream, but now that you kind of are, you know, you're sort of abusing the privilege.
Yeah, and I think that's verbatim exactly what I said, and I do mean that too, that, you know, in New Zealand at least, we get touted as one of the bigger mainstream bands, and it just frustrates me that there's all this trite rubbish out there that actually sings about sits and ass so much that, you know, you forget what else is going on in the world, and it seems like a probably convenient distraction to, you know, if you're talking about elite groups who would prefer that you didn't think about them, you know, that you were thinking about tits and ass and more often. But and you know, who doesn't want to by being human, to be fair? But at the end of the day, there's some other important things too, and I just think it behooves us to at least be a catalyst for some of those conversations.
Well, wading in here, I mean, that's how this elite, we'll just say they for now, really sort of co-opt our consciousness, isn't it, by playing upon our human desires anyway. So we all have these sexual urges, and so they just, you know, play upon that. Or we all have now what could be expressed as monetary urges, greed, or just need, and so they play upon that also. And so that's what they do. They accentuate things so they can have more for them and less for us, I suppose. But you're trying to put the balance out there, and well done.
Yeah, well I think, as you mentioned before, it's responsibility. I think it's the responsibility of the artists and civilization to reflect what's going on for them, and that's what's going on for me. And I'd also want to say that I don't want to make necessarily the people who do write that other music wrong either, because look, I enjoy it for what it is, but at the same time, I think there needs to be a balance of out there on the radio waves of what it is that influences us as artists. And to me, look, I think we've it comes from the context that human society has found itself at a moment in time where an unprecedented number of cultures are, and, you know, coming back to talking about the 2012 phenomenon and predicting this end time. And for me, I think that's way more important than, and don't get me wrong, hey, look, I love dancing, and what we've actually tried to do is through this latest record is actually make it a bit more accessible, a bit more groovy, a bit more dance-oriented so that people suddenly find themselves hooked on the music. But then if they start listening to the lyrics, they might find themselves in the realm of prophecy and tradition and insight, hopefully.
Mm-mm-mm. Using subliminal messages on the audience, eh, Jason? Good on you. Well, it reminds me of a conversation in a film called Human Traffic. Have you seen this film?
Oh, years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was sitting around a table and saying how the music we love brought us together and so did the music we hate. And they rattle off all these mainstream bands. And he says, what really gets me is that these talentless sods they have this international audience and they can say something really profound instead of, ooh, baby, I'm all alone on the phone. I'm 14 years old with a broken heart. You know, it's just cheese on toast, bollocks, mate. You know? And that really kind of polarized for me exactly what music really should be about, because it is, like, for example, back in the 60s, there was a big movements in many, many different fields where musicians were really getting involved in movements to the extent possible and were really revitalizing them. And that's why I wanted to kind of bring you on the show, and why we've had a few MCs and things like that on the show already, is because I think we need to really bring that sort of spirit of resistance and music working together back into our society, because it's missing it right now, I think.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. And look, I guess it's nice to know that there are people like yourselves that acknowledge us as being that emerging part of that emerging culture, at least, too. And, you know, it seems to me, and just in this conversation, that it's almost like a modern-day shamanism is occurring. And there really is this renaissance going on in shamanism, at least, too. And we might as well use the web. We might as well use the broadcasters as well to, you know, to incite these kinds of these thoughts and provocations. And who knows what kind of reactions they'll cause, but someone needs to have them out there.
Well, for you, Jason, I'm interested. What do you see as kind of worrying in the world, or maybe even in New Zealand, and what do you see as positive that's emerging? I mean, what are the big issues for you in the world?
I think the biggest thing for us is a lack of stewardship for our planet Earth. That is that's the key thing for me that is disturbing, that we're not looking after our planet. There's something like, I'm trying to dredge up some info. I think it's like 75% of genetic diversity of agricultural crops has been lost. 75% of the world's fisheries are now fully or overexploited. You've got up to 70% of the world's known species risking extinction if the global temperatures rise by something like 3 degrees or 3.5 degrees. What else? Every second there's a parcel of rainforest the size of a football field that disappears. It just goes on and on. You know, there's a third of reef-building corals around the world threatened with extinction. And, you know, not only that, there are the things we call humans that are living on it too, that obviously we all have an affinity for and we'd like to live through into whatever the next age is. But we have to look after the planet that looks after us. And that's really my main concern. And it's about trying to stir or provoke people about being aware of that, and then up to at that point it's then up to them, and hopefully really all I do is act as the conduit to realize those connections. So those are the things that I think are frustrating for me mostly, but where I think we are going, I think what's exciting for us is that this thing that we're calling, you know, that the popular culture is calling the end of the world, you know, this apocalypse, this 2012 thing, it's actually, you know, depending on whatever your perception is, wherever you want to take all the information and you know, however you process that for yourself, it's fine. But for me, I would rather take the the evolution, the collective evolution path. You know, we were going from an information age, I think, into a wisdom age. And of course, I think where we're at is this fork in the road. But either way, I think it's a great and empowering time to be alive. And in terms of how I put this into my music with the band, it's as much, you know, I'm not here to proselytize necessarily, but because this record is, it's as much a remembering for me personally, this human connection to the divine, as it is a literal, an archive of where I see our society and our participatory nature of our lives as co-creators here on Earth. So I think we're all living for a purpose, and we just need to be awake for it.
It's like basically we're kind of like the executive producers of the planet sort of thing. Speaking of which, we've got a comment in here from our executive producer. He wants to know what you think about Lady Gaga's new perfume that smells like blood.
Does it really?
Yeah.
From the blood of like young children or something? I don't know. Where does that blood, where does that come from? Where does that essence come from? You've got to wonder.
Yeah. It reminds me of that that film Perfume, where the guy kills the most beautiful girls and then he extracts their essence by covering them with wax and then makes these really, really nice perfumes. So the stuff is like sick, man. And then here we have it right here, Mr. Gaga himself.
Look, Lady Gaga's got some good Illuminati connections. They get
here's
blood every day.
How do I buy options? How do I buy shares and stock in there? That's going to go off. I have to make that part of my portfolio.
The thing, Jason. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, that we need to take part. We need to take care of our planet because, you know, what's better for our planet is better for us in the same way what's better for the man down the street is better for me. And we're living in a toxic world, a poison world. We've got PCBs everywhere. Our whole biochemistry is going out of sync. We've got plastics in our food and water, poisons that the government says are safe, like fluoride and aspartame. And there really needs to be a consciousness shift. There really needs to be an awakening of the consciousness to get away from this. But I feel that, like you said, we have this rote learning society, this repeat after me society of so-called knowledge propaganda, instead of wisdom, and therefore people don't recognize the consciousness.
Yeah, and I think it's my duty as an artist to reflect that. And look, and if people don't want to see it, then that's their choice. And once again, I'm not here to proselytize. I'm not going to go stand on a soapbox and twist someone's arm to listen to it, but I will get in their face about it. But ultimately, it's going to be their decision. And I would just hope in my heart of hearts that we are moving through this bottleneck, this convergence into a more positive realm, a more, I guess you'd say, you know, where we're reorienting from a quantitative type of culture into more of a qualitative one. You know, because if we don't, mate, we've pushed this planet far beyond the limits of what's probably possible for it, and it's the planet, as far as I can tell, is about to push back unless we do something in this lifetime.
Everyone's just out to line their pockets, aren't they?
Yeah, I've got like three takes on 2012. You know, the first is the prophesized return of the destroyer. You know, where Planet Nibiru, Planet X, or whatever is going to come in close. The Earth's going to be knocked off its orbit by 23 degrees. There's going to be a big crack, runs around the Earth, big waves, big volcanoes, that kind of thing. Yep. End of the world, 2012 type scenario in the movie. Yep. The second one is it's all just a big psyop hoax to get everybody to stand down to the New World Order takeover. And the third take that I have on it is the Mayan interpretation. I believe this is one of the interpretations of it, is that it's going to be the end of time as we know it, meaning that everybody becomes sort of evolves to a different level. You know, we become smarter and we basically get our SHIT together for once, and we experience a new golden age of humanity. Now, I like that one better, but
I think the one thing that's guaranteed, though, and that people should be wary of, is that the people in power in this world, and you know, going back into what we're talking about with our previous guests, the occult powers, the real secret societies that have leverage over the banking system and everything else, do know about this, and they do know about the shift that's occurring, that NASA has been analoging over a vast period of time now, the magnetic pole shift that's occurring. They know about all these things, and they could hijack and use this crisis as something for themselves to consolidate more power. So I think that's also something that humanity needs to be wary of, like Project Bluebeam, you know, just a provocateur staged event, holographics in the sky, who knows?
I also think, though, look, we underestimate the power of our consciousness, and I think collectively, you know, it's the 144,000 type scenario, right? Get enough people on that wavelength and we could all shift. You don't need everyone on the same line. And we live in a multi-dimensional world, as far as I can tell, like, and it's not something we can go into quickly, but you know, if you choose a particular path, as far as I can tell, it's very likely that that could potentially turn out. And for me, in terms of, you know, just going back to 2012, you know, you just need to look around you. The planet is in a state of upheaval. It's in a state of transition. What we didn't mention there was, we did mention Nibiru, but see, I'm more along the line of the Mayan prophecies myself as well. And look, I don't know what's going to transpire. I have no idea. I don't have a crystal ball in front of me, but, you know, as I think it's, what's his name, Adrian Gilbert and Maurice Cottrell, they, in the Mayan prophecies, it was really all about the end of the great cycle, coinciding with the culmination of a series of powerful sunspots, and the intensity of that magnetic flux would flip not only the sun's field but also the Earth, causing earthquakes and flooding on Earth. And alongside that was also the claim that this magnetic field change would also alter, you know, we're getting into kind of fuzzy space here, but would alter the pineal gland and affect hormone production. And because it's the pineal gland associated with the third eye, this would help us tune into like a theta type condition and adjusting the magnetic conditions on the planet and further evolve where we're at. And I remember even 12 years ago reading a paper by Alexei Dmitriev, who is a Russian astrophysicist, talking about how the whole solar system is actually in a highly charged part of interstellar space. And that's actually what's heading, that's, you know, that whole mechanism is what was largely due to the reason for the influx in the energy, not only in the sun, but as you can see, with all the planets on in the solar system as well. So there's so many facets, I guess, is what the point is. And it's really difficult to try and, well, for me at least, to try and pin down where exactly to orient myself amongst all the information. But at the end of the day, I think it comes down to a personal choice about how you want to orient yourself spiritually. Are you interested in qualitative or quantitative?
The difficult thing, though, Jason, is that sometimes, or a lot of the time, in fact, our choices are being influenced by factors outside of our control or even our perception.
Like Gaga.
And that's a dangerous thing, you know, because like you're saying about the pineal gland, well, you know, we got studies going back to the 20s from the British that showed fluoride to actively suppress and even calcify the thalamus and hypothalamus, and then the Nazis used this, and now John Key uses this on us, and this is really sad because we're cutting down the little shoots of the children before they have time to develop, and this has happened to myself, and this has happened to all of us, and it's kind of sad.
And yet, isn't the revelation, if you like, the unveiling that you're able to tell me about this versus not knowing? And so hopefully there are other people who actually take insight from this and may not drink the water that is fluoridated, or a myriad of other possibilities. I think the choice ultimately has to be ours.
The human spirit is an unstoppable force, is it not?
Yeah, it's like I was talking to a guy at a party the other night. It's like the human spirit is the wild card. You are the individual. You have the biggest part to play. It doesn't matter how big the powerful the collective is. An individual can always rise above it and change it all. Now, I'm not sure how much time you've got to stay with us, Jason, but hopefully you might be back with us after the break. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest is Jason Kerrison from Op Shop, and you will be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a fabulous musical pontification hour on the Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very, very extra special guest with sauce on top is Jason Kerrison from Op Shop. Welcome back, mate.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Oh yeah! Now you've got to go in about 10 minutes, so you'll be gone halfway through this segment. So we just kind of wanted to pick your brain a little bit. The system itself, it's as you sort of said over the break, that it's kind of corroding, and in the meantime, basically, we just kind of have to create a new system and let the old one collapse, and then replace it when it does.
Yeah, I don't know if I put it that well. I just don't see it being. It occurs that if we treat it like that, then it's always a separatist situation versus being integrated. And I don't think it helps to be to treat it as an oppositional process. I think it's best for just to create the scaffolding for making the transition. You know, organizing communities, relocalizing food production, reskilling, using alternative energy systems. You know, we have to actually be participatory and active in bringing about transformation ourselves as we move forward out of these. You know, we're going, depending on where your perspective is in peak oil, but it certainly occurs to me that at the very least, these energy systems certainly aren't working. So,
I mean, I think the problem occurs, Jason, where we try and set up community gardens, or we try and get off the grid. I mean, you try and get your own water tank system in Auckland, and then it ends up being a confrontational process because of the state's power, because they don't want people to become independent. Ultimately, they passed S510 in the states. They're trying to ban food production. So Monsanto has all the contracts, and they're doing what they're doing to the seed stock, whilst the UN has these big seed vaults at the South Pole and whatnot. I mean, it just becomes a confrontational thing because the government just doesn't want to give you any inch.
Yeah, yeah, and if the government did perhaps give you freedom, then of course you'd be lathered with tons of responsibility.
You don't want that. Yeah, look, I just come down once again to the fact that we touched on before, and that is ultimately the human being is the wild card. I just refuse to participate in the oppositional process. Look, for me personally, I've gone and set up once again, lack of a better phrase, of a 2012 community, but at least it communicates some of the reasons why we're getting off the grid. But it is going to be a transitional phase for us. You know, we are literally setting up these amazing situations up in Kaitaia. So in New Zealand, Kaitaia is very, very close to the tip of the North Island, and we're about 30 k's from there. But we're equally about 4.5 hours away from our biggest city. So look, we're finding our own little space. We're literally just going up into the hills. And we're keeping a focus on our key design criteria. We're trusting that there's a collective genius of the community that enables this feasible and practicable and highly inventive solution to emerge. So that's what we're doing. We're not going to sit back and wait for someone else to do the work.
Exactly. You're just taking charge of your own destiny and just surround yourself with good people and wholesomeness and let the rest happen, huh?
Yeah, that's it, man. Well, you know, that's it. I just firmly believe that we have to be absolutely participatory and active in bringing about this transformation that we're talking about, whereas we always seem to come up against it when we go into this, as you say, and it certainly seems like an oppositional process when you hit them at that level, when you engage at that level.
Well, I would think that any time when you surround yourself with an environment of intelligent people who talk about interesting stuff all the time, who are really open and very loving and very caring, you become an intelligent, open, loving, caring person. You know, it's very, very difficult to kind of go against the grain. And I think this is kind of the opposite of what happens just in general, is that we're surrounded by people who, you know, basically they don't have any what I would term as a value system. There is a value system, except it's based on paper that's made up out of thin air and backed by nothing.
And so therefore
people's value systems are also backed by absolutely nothing. So how strong could they conceivably be?
Well, because people are killing each other over dollar bills every day. I mean people are at each other's throats over this fiat currency every single day. And yet there's no caring about any of the human universe. You know, they don't have similar care for human universals and planetary universals. And it really is sad. I mean, I there needs to be a shift. I mean, if there's not, we're in trouble.
I mean, for me, I feel like we're going through that shift. It feels like we're having those we're up against it now. And it really is a time now where this is the window of opportunity. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Daniel Pinchbeck, but, you know, I agree with him in that this is the window of opportunity to catalyze a shift in a complete and absolute global consciousness and society. But it's only going to happen if we engage at the level we choose to engage in. If we stopped by this oppositional process, then, you know, we need to reorient and just get on with it.
Well, I think that's about right, isn't it? You know, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, trying to make some description of progress, it would stand to reason that actually doing something to try and effect progress rather than just complaining about how little progress there is, I think it'd probably be far more effective. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly the point. And so for us, we've decided to basically build ourselves the ultimate batch, the batch in New Zealand is, you know, or crib. It's, you know, the ultimate safe home. And hopefully it's the ultimate safe home. Equally, hopefully it's as good as a shelter system, climate protection, self-sustainability. It's grid positive. It's fire retardant, hurricane and tornado proof. I think we've got coming the third or fourth hurricane of the season for this year in New Zealand, which is, I don't know if that's unprecedented, but I can't recall that ever having been the case. And so for us, look, we just want to be fully contained. We want to look after each other. We want to, you know, make use of the natural renewable resources in our surrounding area and not be restricted necessarily by these other conventions. And so the idea is obviously to have it fully self-contained, water storage, the septic systems, the plumbing, the food storage, the hydroponics, all the air filtration systems, the power generation, just literally being off the grid and being part of this, what I would call, and I think Pinchbeck actually mentioned it again, there's this transition network which is based in the UK, and a lot of communities are now getting involved in it as they see themselves moving through these difficult times.
Yeah, transition towns. I've done a video series for them as well. Well, Jason, I'd like to thank you profusely for coming on the show with us and sharing some of your valuable time, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it has been a pleasure. I really appreciate it. And you guys are doing some amazing work. So I want to acknowledge that as well and send that out to the ether and say thanks very much.
All right.
Hey, thank you, Jason.
All right. And do you have a website there for your new album yet?
Look, you can come and visit my band at www.opshopmusic.com. It's all one word.
All right, cool. Certainly send some people there and put the links up on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you're unfamiliar with Jason Kerrison's music, ladies and gentlemen, it's actually pretty badass, you know, and not in the Lady Gaga, I want to sacrifice children on stage sense of the word. or at least brilliant. I should hope not.
yeah, no, not yet, unless I've got a perfume to sell or something, but we'll see how we go, eh?
Yeah, let's just see if Jay-Z recruits you or something. You know,
waiting for those Illuminati videos.
I've actually started doing the Illuminati sign these days too, just to drum up a bit of business. Oh
yeah. Good hand
sign. Dark side. Well, thanks, guys. Have a great day. Eh?
All right. You enjoy it. Later. See you, mate.
See you later, mate.
All right, there he goes. Jason Kerrison, ladies and gentlemen, from Op Shop. All right. Well, that was a great interview, man. We enjoyed that.
Yeah. I think he leveled us both out for a little while, didn't he? Calmed us down.
You know, what's that about?
It works, though, doesn't it? He's hypnotizing. He's using his psychic NZ on air mind powers over us. But yeah. Seriously, I mean, well, I think we engage in a bit of both, though. I mean, we talked about different forms of resistance. Go your own path, build your own communities, get off the grid. I mean, we're all for this. And sometimes I don't know, speaking for myself, maybe I don't say this enough. We're not just about bleating about the government. No, I hate John Key. No, I hate. We're about solutions also, but we just hope that you know that anyway. And you've already got some veggies out the back like I have, and you're trying to eat well and drink well and keep away from the mega corpse and their poison as much as possible. But we still do a bit of up against the machine resistance too, as everyone knows.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're street activists, and basically, I think that the trick to having your activism be effective is you have to be able to fight on multiple fronts. You know, like we can simultaneously, at the same time that we're hosting a radio show that goes out internationally, we're also making YouTube videos, we've also got a website, and we also go and ambush politicians when they least expect it.
And that is kind of confrontational, and that could be seen as divisive, but it's there not as an attack on the individual so much as showing other people there's no such thing as fear of these people, you know what I mean? You don't have to be afraid. They don't have real power over you, and we can live our lives as we see fit. Well, that's...
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, you still kind of get that sort of nervousness, you know, like the heart starts pumping and the adrenaline comes up when you go and ambush John Key with a camera. And, you know, unsurprisingly, he didn't turn into some description of horned demon and bite out my throat and then feed me to his young. So, yeah.
But I mean, that fear is just our flesh. It's just our conditioning. It's just what we've been trained to be, fearful of men in black with automatic weapons. Okay, most people are afraid of those guys, sure.
Or ladies in red in Helen Clark's case.
but if you learn your subjects and you're educated on something and you know what you're talking about, and more, if you have got, you know, if you're attuned with your consciousness at some level, I know that sounds kind of out in the clouds, but it's a real thing. Then you're not afraid of these guys. And that doesn't mean you go out and punch them in the face or anything. That just means that you can go up and talk to them.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I mean, I really love what Penny Bright does, because she is out there in their face every single day. And she told me, you know, do one thing every day that scares you. And I thought for myself, you know, hold on a second. Is it, in fact, a bad thing at any point to scare yourself? I'm not sure if it is, because to scare yourself is to challenge yourself. And if you were to live a life that is free of challenge, you would also be living a life that is free of personal growth.
I mean, there's lots of analogies. I mean, changing gears here, the New Zealand driving public, I mean, our driver standards in this country are pretty shocking, and people could get behind the wheel of a 5-litre V8 at 15. And I've always thought, you know, they should be trained in how to get into a slide at 100 k's before they're allowed on the motorway, because sooner or later you're going to get into a slide at 100 k's on the motorway. You're not going to know anything about opposite lock, and you're going to go smack and kill someone. It's the same sort of thing. If you scare enough preemptively, if you scare yourself enough, you can condition yourself in order to deal with fear better and keep a clear head. And it's the same in terms of going up to your local MP. You need to get past those boundaries, past the social boundaries, past the fear, by practicing it and by getting right with yourself, pretty much. It's training. Any sort of training betters a person's ability to deal with a situation when it comes to a point of reality.
Yeah, well, I tend to agree with you, Will, on that. And it's like we were saying there about the individual being the wild card, because an individual can resist the collective, an individual can resist its own conditioning. The individual is essentially all powerful, but it's all powerful over itself. You know, it's like a poker game. A king's a king and a queen, but jokers are wild. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back after the break. Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Now, one particular subject that I wanted to cover here, just in a final segment here, is what's happening in Egypt. And there's a bunch of articles that are now posted on guerrillamedia.co.nz regarding this. And I don't want to kind of run through the headlines here. Egyptian army warns it will treat protesters as criminals. And central Cairo, as most people should know, is now packed to the brim. I mean, seriously, it's like a music festival out there, except they're not just dancing around and having a good time. They're pretty effed off with the government. And it's probably because, the headline of this other article, U.S. ammunition used against Egyptians. It's been lost on no one that empty shell casings from live ammunition and gas canisters, which litter Tahrir Square and other streets across Egypt, were provided by the United States of America, who incidentally, I believe, give about $1 billion in aid to Egypt every year or something along those lines. I forget exactly how much. But what happens is, and I mean, this is very interesting, isn't it, Will, that if you're basically a corrupt dictatorial country or whatever, you'll more than likely get some donations from the States. Just like the former managing director of Goldman Sachs has come out and says that the Egyptians, Greeks, Tunisians, and British are all protesting against the pillaging of their economy. Nomi Prins, former managing director of Goldman Sachs and head of the International Analytics Group at Bear Stearns in London, notes that the Egyptian people are rebelling against being pillaged by giant international banks and their own government as much as anything else. She also points out that Greek, British, Tunisian, and other protesters were all on the same boat. The ongoing demonstration in Egypt are as much, if not more, about the mass deterioration of economic conditions and the harsh result of years of financial deregulation than the political ideology that some of the mass media seems to be focused on. And, you know, it's not in any way surprising to me that the mass media isn't focusing on reality. Have they done that before? I'm not sure. And also, other article here, Egypt, cue the dirty tricks. false flags to discredit pro-democracy movement. The looting of Cairo's world-famous Egyptian museum over the weekend seems to have engendered the desired news headlines. Looters smash ancient treasures. Looters decapitate mummies. Looters rip off heads of artifacts, etc. Read a rash of headlines following the apparent breaking into the country's national museum, which is said to house the world's biggest of pharaohic antiquities. However, it has since emerged, although with much less headline coverage, that some of the would-be looters apprehended by protesters outside the museum were identified as working for the state's interior ministry. And if that wasn't bad enough, Mubarak gives the army a shoot-to-kill order. Embattled President Hosni Mubarak has reportedly given his armed forces the authority to shoot to kill as anti-government protests gain momentum. I would say they're gaining saturation rather than momentum. You know, that is just building up, man. I mean, seriously, it's like a big 2012 type tsunami out there of public support for the protesters. Reports say the army has been ordered to shoot when it sees fit. Military helicopters and jet fighters fly over major locations as the number of protesters multiply there. And I was watching One News last night, and they're flying jets and military helicopters really, really low over these huge swaths of protesters to intimidate them. Now, I don't know about you, but if I was protesting in the streets of New Zealand, let's say it was the mining protest where we had 50,000 people on the streets of Auckland protesting against the government's plan to mine national parks, things of this nature. And if we had any, which we don't, New Zealand Air Force jets flying over the protest, wouldn't you think, holy cow, the government's uber tyrannical now all of a sudden? You know, I mean, for goodness sake, is that not the very definition of a tyrannical government, where you're using the army to intimidate people who don't agree with it? You know, I mean, the army shouldn't really be called in to settle civil unrest, unless, of course, it's just a wholesale anarchy going on and just, you know, come in to keep order. But even then, what's happening to the police? I mean, is there not supposed to be some description of habeas corpus, you know, a prevention of military from doing the police's job? Because after all, the military ain't trained to deal with the public. They're trained to kill.
And the army's prime function, Vinny, the real function of the military, is for the public. They just drum up foreign wars to give them the excuse to build up the armies in order to have this defense strategy for their own populations. It's all about militarizing, then militarizing police to use the police as a weapon on the public.
I agree.
These are all covert measures. Once again, multiple reasons, multiple excuses, logical reasoning for something that has a covert use. That's what these guys are all about. But then I just wanted to weigh in quickly. I encourage people to research the link between the CIA and the secret societies like the Skull and Bones. It's real. It was expressed in the 2006 Robert De Niro movie, The Good Shepherd, with Matt Damon. And all these groups are interrelated. That's the truth of it. Just look at someone like Bill Clinton. Clinton was a member of Bilderberg. He was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a member of the Trilateral Commission. And he was also a Freemason. In fact, a senior de Molay Freemason. So once again, look into these groups. This is nothing unusual. They're all interrelated.
There's more incest than the royal family. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, broadcasting live from New Zealand. Proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen.